We are in Shmuel, and we were up to what's called the 23rd chapter. We had seen that David married Shaul's daughter, Michal, an unusually pious woman, one of the seven prophetesses, right? According to one opinion, or one of the beautiful people in creation. We had seen that Yonasan, Shaul's son, really loves his brother-in-law, David, and makes a pact with David and tells him, "You're going to be king and I'll follow you." We know that David was already anointed a while ago by Shmuel as the future king of the Jewish people. And we know that Shaul is attempting to kill David. And Shaul has murdered, not directly, but through his servant Doeg Adoni, all the Kohanim in Nov, because he suspects they were in cahoots with David. All of David's family has been killed by the king of Ammon, the king of Moab. And now David has his band of 600 men. And he goes, he's by the desert in an area called Ziph. And the people of Ziph, the Ziphim, come to Shaul and they say, "You should know that David's hiding in our territory. And whenever you want, we'll give him over to you." And Shaul says, "Blessed are you to Hashem for having mercy over me. But I want you to prepare, because when David was one of my men, he used to tell me how cunning he was. He never spent a whole night in one place. He's always on the move. You think he's here tomorrow morning, you wake up, he's not there. He moved in the middle of the night. He's so cunning, you got to really follow him and spy him out so you cover all of his hiding places, and then I'll come." So they do that. And they play it like they're David's friends. And they go back and they keep reporting to Shaul. And Shaul has his men prepare. And now they have mapped out all of the different places that David has set up to run to. And then Shaul comes, and David has to run. And every place he wants to run, Shaul's men are there. So he's got to run in unknown territory, and he makes a fatal error. He climbs up a mountain, and he's planning to go over that mountain to the other side. And he forgets that Shaul does not have to climb up the mountain following him. And instead, what Shaul does is, Shaul waits at the bottom and surrounds the mountain with his men. He does not go up the mountain after David. And so David is at the top of the mountain, and David has, and Shaul and his men surround, and they start closing in on David. And David is standing up there on the mountain, he's got nowhere to run. What's he going to do? Fight his brothers? And at that moment, David says about that moment in Hallel and Tehillim, he says, "Ani amalti v'chovzi." When I was on the run, at that moment, and I had no place to go, I was surrounded by Shaul's men. At that moment I said, "Kol Adam Kozev." That chapter in Tehillim, what does it mean, "Kol Adam Kozev"? Everyone's a liar. Even Shmuel's a liar. Shmuel the prophet told me, "I'm going to be king. Where's my throne? What king? I'm a dead man." David says, "When I was up there, I lost faith in everyone. Ani amalti v'chofzi. When I was on the run, I said, Kol Adam Kozev, everyone's a liar." And we have to learn from David. There are times in life when we feel like everyone's a liar, even the rabbi. Look, David was talking about his rabbi. He was talking about Shmuel the prophet. Chazal tell us, Shmuel was equal to Moshe plus Aaron. Doesn't get bigger than that. And yet, when times got tough, David said even about him, he's a liar. Where are his promises now? And we have to be prepared for these weaknesses. We have to be prepared for these weak moments. My father always used to warn us. I remember what David said. "Ani amalti v'chofzi." I said when I was on the run. When you'll have moments in life when you feel like everyone's a liar, remember it's because you're on the run. It's because you don't have the presence of mind to settle down. When things go bad and you don't have time to think, that's when you feel like everyone's a liar. This guy cheated me. That guy cheated me. Everyone's cheating me. No, not everyone's a liar. So David is surrounded, and there's no natural way in which he can get out of it. And one of the tests that Hashem gives us in life is that Hashem puts us in situations where we don't know how we can get out of it. And Chazal tell us that you want to know who are God-fearing people? Look at the sailors. Look at the people who cross deserts. Because they are often in situations where they know that they're at the mercy of nature. And people who realize that life is beyond their own control, those people talk to God. The reason when we come into daven, very often our davening is somewhere in the siddur there. Our minds are somewhere out of the shul. And our lips do the moving, is because we feel like we're in control. A person doesn't feel like he's in the hospital ward. A person doesn't feel like things can change on him in a moment. A person feels like things are status quo, you know, everything's okay. There's no war. There's no, we don't see any nuclear bombs coming tomorrow. We don't see any attack from Hamas coming tomorrow. Today everything's been relatively calm. So a guy walks into my room and it's like, gee, the rabbis told me to do this. I'll do this. Okay, I got some things to talk to God about. And by the time he hits Shimon Ezra, his mind is elsewhere. If a person were to realize before his davening, if he would think for a moment of all the gifts Hashem gives him and how perilous life is, how dangerous life is, how the human condition is so frail, then a person's davening would look different. So a person has to know that sometimes Hashem gives us these reminders, like David. Sometimes Hashem puts us in a situation where we know there's no way out. Suddenly we're reminded, hey, wait a second. There's no way you can get out of this. Hashem is the only one who could get you out of this. And when a person is in that situation, he has two choices. A person can say, forget it, I'm tired of this. Why do I have to be under such pressure? Or a person can say, let me talk to God. And then a person can take advantage of those moments and grow out of those moments. Those moments are really opportunities. The hardships in life are opportunities to connect to Hashem. Just like within marriage, we say every hardship is an opportunity to build the marriage, so too in all of life. Every hardship is an opportunity to connect to Hashem. And so David HaMelech composes chapters of Tehillim up there on the mountain. He's talking to Hashem. And Chazal tell us that the Pasuk Chaf Zayin, that says, Umalach Ba, a messenger came and told Shaul, that now that he's taken all his forces to capture David, the Philistines have attacked him from behind and they're spreading out across the land of Israel. And he better run now or else there's going to be nothing left to save. Chazal tell us that wasn't a messenger. Umalach ba, an angel came and told Shaul. That was an angel who came to save David at that moment. And Shaul, in his great piety, although he knows his major threat, the threat to his throne, is David. Shaul also cares very, very deeply for the Jewish people. And that's why Shaul lets go, makes an about face, and goes to ward off the oncoming Philistine attack. And at that moment, David realizes that he can't trust anyone anymore. And about this moment, David composed many of the chapters in Tehillim. Some of the chapters were composed up there, and some of the chapters were composed later. In hindsight, David looked back and said, so many people played it like they were my friends, and then they put knives in my back. And when David speaks throughout Tehillim about the people who speak slander, and the people who are nice to you in the front and stab you in the back, many of those chapters are talking about the Zifim, the people of Zif, who endangered him and his men, while playing it nice on one side and giving all the information to Shaul on the other side.
So how did the situation involve him?
What?
How did the situation involve him?
When the messenger came to Shaul and told him that there's a Philistine attack and he better run and bring the army back, Shaul left and then David was able to leave.
Zifim or Jews?
Yes. Now, Shaul got word that David was in the desert of Ein Gedi. So he took 3,000 chosen soldiers and he went to catch David. And there's a midrash that says that David asked God about different things that God created. You remember we mentioned that David asked God why he created insanity in the world, and then God showed him that there's a need for it. And then there's a midrash that says that David asked God why did he create the spider, the vicious spider. He draws webs and they bother people. And then they capture other flies and he just sucks their blood. Well, why did he create the spider? What good does the spider do to the world? So God said, wait, you'll see, you'll need him. So at one point when Shaul and his men were chasing David, David entered a cave. This is a famous midrash. All the parents know it and the children know it. He entered a cave And Shaul came to the cave, and God sent a spider a minute earlier, and the spider drew a fantastic web across the cave. And when Shaul and his men stood out the cave, they looked at the spider webs all going all across the entrance to the cave. They said, no one came in here. Look at all the spider webs. No one could go through that, and the webs would stay intact. So they left the cave. And at that moment, David realized even a spider and his web sometimes could be used to save a human's life. God knew why he created the spider and his web. So when I was a kid, children would say, don't kill a spider. They saved David's life. I was I don't know if there's a source for that. Even this Medrash, I could only find it in Rabbi Eisenstein's Otzar HaMidrashim. I couldn't find it in any regular Medrash. David and his men were hiding in a cave, and Shaul left his men outside and went into that cave to go to the bathroom. And the pasuk describes his going to the bathroom as lehasech et raglav, which means to pour out his feet. Lashon HaKodesh is called the holy tongue. It is the tongue that God speaks in, that the Tanakh is written in. It is also a tongue that has no dirty words. So there's no exact word to describe the aperture that a person makes from. We call it pouring out his feet, which is an allusion to what's near the feet. Chazal tell us the term lehasech is like lehasech from schach. Schach is a covering that Shaul, when he sat down to go to the bathroom, even though he was inside a private cave as far as he knew, he didn't know that sitting deep in the cave were 600 men ready to kill him. He thought he was all alone in the cave. So he sat in the cave and he set up his clothing as a mechitza, lehasech, like schach. He made a little sukkah, a modest way to sit in the cave to go to the bathroom. Shaul was extraordinarily modest in everything he did, and we will see that that trait stayed in his family. So David and his men are in the back of the cave, and his men tell him, this is the day that God promised you, you'll have your enemy and you'll be able to do with him whatever you want. And David slowly approaches Shaul from behind, and Shaul is sitting there doing his needs. And David comes forward and draws his sword and slices off a corner of Shaul's coat. And right after David does that, he has great regret that he did that to Shaul. And he turns back and he comes back to his men, and they tell him, what'd you do? Why didn't you kill him? So David says, God forbid, how could I do that? He's my master, he's anointed by God. I can't kill a person anointed by God as king. And David split his men and spoke harshly to them and didn't let them. They all wanted to pounce and kill Shaul. And David told them, don't you dare. Shaul finishes doing what he has to do and he leaves the cave. He leaves the cave and David comes out after him. And he calls out and he says, my master, the king. Shaul turns around. David bows all the way flat out on the ground. David turns to Shaul and he says, why do you listen to men saying that David seeks your bad? Why do you listen to men who say, I want to do you harm? Today your eyes have seen that God gave you in my hands in that cave. And people, my men said I should kill you, but I had mercy over you. And I said, no, I will not touch my master. You are anointed by God. David is talking to the king. David is also talking to his father-in-law. A man who has been chasing him and trying to kill him. A man who has made his first priority bumping off David. And then David says a fantastic line. David holds up the corner of the coat and he says, Ve'avi re'ei gam re'ei. And my father, see, please see, the corner of your coat that is in my hand. Because when I cut the corner of your coat and I didn't kill you, I want you to know that I want you no harm. And I've never done you anything wrong, and you're trying to kill me. Chazal tell us, look at this juncture. Here, this is the worst father-in-law you could dream of. You know, whatever you have to say about your father-in-law, Shaul's been trying to kill him. Straight up. And how does David call him? He calls him Avi, my father. From here the Jerusalem Talmud derives, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that a son-in-law is supposed to call his father-in-law Abba. It's not, It's not a must, but it's respectful. That's the way a son-in-law should refer to his father-in-law. Should call his father-in-law Abba, his mother-in-law Ima. And as bad as you think your in-laws are, they're not trying to kill you, I think. I think they're not trying to kill you. David says to Shaul, God should judge between me and you. And God should take revenge from you. But my hand will not be raised against you. As the ancient allegory says, wickedness comes from the wicked. I don't want to be the cause of your death. After who has the king of Israel come out? After who are you chasing? After a dead dog? After a little fly? Am I worth your efforts? So many soldiers. Over who? Little old me. What are you so worried about? Hashem should judge between us. And Hashem should see that I could have killed you and didn't. And Hashem should fight my fight. And Hashem should punish you and judge you from my hand. David finishes his speech. And Shaul, as if in a daze, Shaul turns to David and says, is that your voice, my son David? And Shaul starts weeping. And Shaul says to David, you are more righteous than I am, because you've done me kindness, and I've done you harm. And you've shown today that you've done kindness with me. Hashem gave me in your hands and you did not kill me. When a person finds his enemy and lets him go in good peace, Hashem pays him back. And Hashem should pay you back for the kindness you did me today. And I know that you will be king instead of me, and your kingdom will be successful over Israel. Promise me that you won't view my children as your threat. When a new king comes to the throne, sometimes he has to annihilate any remembrance of the old king, lest they come back to haunt him. Promise me you won't kill my children. Promise me you won't annihilate my name from my father's house. And David promises to Shaul. Shaul goes home, and David and his men go up to hide. They're not too confident. Shmuel passes away. Everyone gathers to eulogize. They bury him. And David goes out to the desert of Paran. Now in the desert of Paran, he meets up with the shepherds of Navos. Naval. There was a man named Naval who was also from the tribe of Yehuda. And his wife was one of the most beautiful women that ever lived. His wife was also a prophetess. Her name was Abigail. She was brilliant. And he was a bitter man. And he was a relative of David. But as brave as he was, he used it for bad. Now, his men, his shepherds, stayed next to David when they were out with the sheep. And they gained a lot, because David's men took good care of them. Whatever they needed, they helped them out. Now, they used to make a party when they'd shear the sheep. They'd make a party for the shepherds who watched the sheep. They were making a lot of money. They were shearing the sheep from all the wool they had grown. So they'd make a big party. And Naval was making this party. So David sent word. He sent 10 lads to Naval. And he says, greet him with peace. Va'amartem kol echai. We wish you next year you should be alive like this and celebrating. You should be with peace. Your house should be with peace. Everything you own should be with peace. I heard you're making a party. You know, we took really good care of your men when they were with us. You didn't lose anything. So long as they were with us in the desert, we protected them. Ask them, they'll tell you. Now we've come to you on a day that you're celebrating. Please give us something from the celebration. Send a portion to your servant David. David didn't have too much food out there. And he was hoping when he's making a party, so I'll send a few portions. David and his men will have what to eat. Naval looks at the men and says, who's David? Who's the son of Yishai? You know how many servants there are today who rebel against their master? I'm going to take my bread, my water, my meat that I prepared for my shepherds, and I'll give it to the men who I've never heard where they're coming from, what they are. And he really lets them have it. And he speaks about David like he's some kind of rebel, some renegade. And the lads come back and tell David. And after this man has cursed out David. Remember, this is after Shaul admitted that David is going to be king. Shmuel anointed David as king. And he's saying, you're some rebel, who are you? Who's David, son of Ishai? What should I help you for? David convenes his court, and he says, how do we judge a man? And they decide that he's considered rebelling against the king. They put on their swords, and they go out, and they're ready to kill Naval and his men, and take everything he owns, destroy everything. Now, one of the lads went over to the wife, Abigail, and said, told her over the story what happened. And he told her, I want you to know, the men were really kind to us. They really took care of us. And so long as we were with them, we were safe. You wouldn't know we were out in the desert. They took such good care of us. They protected us by day. They protected us by night. And I got to tell you that when he speaks to David in such a shameful way, I'm not sure anyone's going to be alive by tomorrow morning if you don't fix it. And he was right. David was on his way with his men. He wasn't about to leave anyone there. So Abigail takes 200 loaves of bread, 2 big barrels of wine, 5 sheep cut up into meat, 5 pitchers of sweet flour, 100 dried figs, 100 dried grapes, 200 dried figs. She loads up a bunch of donkeys and starts heading out to David, and she doesn't say a word to her husband, Naval. She's riding down one mountain, and David is riding down the opposite mountain. And as she's on her camel, her thigh gets revealed. And David sees it from afar. And he charges with his horse. She is the most beautiful woman, one of the most beautiful women that were ever created. Chazal count her as one of the most beautiful women in Gemara and Megillah. We just learned it last week. So, David rides up, and she bows before him, and she says, please, my master, it's all my fault what happened. Let me talk to you, and please listen to what I have to say. Don't listen to that guy who has no fear of heaven. His name is Naval. Naval means derelict. And that's what he is too. He's just like his name. My master, I didn't see your servants that you sent. Please, may you live, may your soul live, and God should save you from coming in bloods. What's she saying? Chazal say that David was very attracted to her. Now a woman, after she's had her period, the Torah says she has to have 7 days that she's clean, in which she checks that she's clean. She takes a cloth and checks herself that she's clean. So the rabbis have a tradition going back to Moshe, how to look at a cloth and recognize if what's on it is just dirt or it's really blood. So she takes out a cloth and she says to David, is this blood or am I pure? Am I allowed to be with my husband or not? Is it David is attracted to her? And she says to him, tell me, is this cloth blood or not? David tells her, it's the middle of the night. How can I see if it's blood or not? You got to see by daylight. She says to him, right, it's the middle of the night. And how do you convene a court in the middle of the night to decide whether you killed my husband or not? So he says to her, I don't need a court. A king can kill anyone that rebels against him. I don't need my court to execute him. One who rebels against the king deserves the death penalty without a court. So she says to him, I'm sorry, I don't think that the world recognizes you as king yet. I haven't seen you produce a coin that's used throughout the country yet. You've been anointed king by the prophet. The king said you're going to be the next king. But right now, you haven't been accepted by the people as king. You're not a full-fledged king, and you don't have the right to kill someone who rebels against you. David says, you saved me from 2 forms of blood. One, you're defiled, and I didn't know that. You saved me from going with you. 2, you saved me from spilling your husband's blood and everyone else's blood. You proved me incorrect. We derive from this conversation that there are stages to a king's becoming a king. One of the stages is what Abigail claimed. The people have to accept him as king. And if you recall, when Shaul was first appointed as king, people mocked him. People said, how's he going to save us? What's he going to do? And Shaul was silent. He was modest. He went back home to Givat Shaul. After he won the war against Nachash, he saved the people of Yavesh Gilad, Shmuel tells the people, now let's go renew the kingship. Why does he have to renew the kingship? Because the first time he appointed Shaul as king, the people didn't all accept him. Now that they're all impressed by what a great warrior he is, they'll all accept him. So Shmuel goes and renews the kingship. There's a lot more to discuss here. She goes into the different, if we read into her words, Chazal derived the different concepts of Gan Eden, Gehenem, Kafakela. All of that is within her words. She was a prophet. We don't have time for it today. You could listen to classes from previous years. Maybe we went into it with greater depth. Abigail tells him, don't let this be a sin, a blemish on your reputation for spilling clean blood. Hashem, you will be king, and don't let this blemish your reputation. Notice the difference between David and Shaul. We're going to see this time and again. They're faced with similar challenges. Shaul thought the people of Novi or Kohanim rebelled. He murdered them. David thought that Naval rebelled. He was ready to murder Naval, but someone came and gave him the right word at the right time. Someone spoke to him in a smart way and saved him from it. David was about to sin twice. David was about to sin with Abigail. She saved him. David was about to sin with murdering all of Naval's men. And Abigail saved him. He could have done the same error as Shaul. But someone put in the right word at the right time. And David was ready to listen. Yes?
Wouldn't it have been a greater sin to be with another man's wife than the inyan of Nida?
Yes, even though it's a machlokes Rambam, if the inyan of Nida is Yaharek Val Yavar, like someone else's wife. Meaning we shouldn't belittle the concept of Nida. We rule in Halacha that Nida is just short of that. We rule in Halacha that Nida is almost Yaharek Val Yavar, but it doesn't quite make it. It's just the step before that. So yes, technically a married woman is more severe because it's Yaharek Val Yavar, right? But she wasn't going to be a married woman for many more minutes had David had his way. You know, there wouldn't have been a husband around. Abigail spoke prophecy at that moment. She said, don't let this get in your way, because a different woman would get in his way. There would be the whole story of Bathsheba, which would be a blemish on David's records. And David blesses her. And he says, blessed is Hashem, the God of Israel, who sent you here today. Because you saved me, and blessed is your logic, and blessed are you. You saved me from coming in two bloods today, and you saved me. And I swear that if you wouldn't have been here so quick, by morning light, there would have been no one left in that home alive. David took all the gifts she brought him, and he said, go home in peace. I've listened to you. I've accepted what you've said. Abigail had concluded her speech and said, and when everything goes good for you, David, remember me. Abigail was a prophet. And she came home, and Naval had it, was partying away. He was all drunk. She didn't tell him anything till the morning. In the morning, when he was sober, she told him what happened. She told him that they were all almost killed, and that she went, and she gave David all the things she gave him. And he became very depressed. He got very scared when he realized he had a near miss with death, that he was minutes away from dying, and he was finished. 10 days later, he got very ill, and he died. David didn't have to kill him. God killed him. 10 days later. It's like the forbidden fruit. Had Adam waited another hour or two, he would have supposed to make kiddush on the grapes for Friday night. That's what we do every Friday night. We take the forbidden fruit, we make kiddush over it. Adam just ate it a little bit too early. That's what life is about. The Torah teaches us to wait, and when it'll be permitted, it'll be so much sweeter. A person, when he sins, does the exact sin of Adam by the Eitz Hadas. He says, but I want it now. It's sweet, I want it now, I want it the way I want it. Not with the pauses and the correct measurement that the Torah teaches. David waited. He waited 10 days later. Naval died. And now he sends word to Abigail. He sends word, would she like to come and be his wife? And Abigail bows and says, I am his maid to wash the feet of the servants of my master. Those are Abigail's words. Now, she wasn't a small woman. She was a prophet. She came with her servants, and she became David's wife, and David had a few more wives. And then we conclude with a very interesting thing. Shaul takes his daughter Michal, who is a very big tzaddikess, and says, you are not legally married to David. You go marry Palti ben Laish. He's a very big tzaddik, and the halacha is that you are not married to David. Takes her and gives her to Palti ben Laish. And Palti ben Laish is a huge tzaddik. He can't refuse David. He can't refuse Shaul. He can't live with Michal. He takes a sword and puts it in between his bed and hers and says, anyone that budges is getting killed. This sword is staying here till you leave. And throughout the days that Michal is in Palti ben Laish's tent, the sword remains between the two beds and he doesn't come near her. We're going to have to pick up here.
We already married. She's going to die.
So when she married David, there were two components to the marriage. There was the foreskins of the Philistines and there was the actual money that David later gave. And we discussed there the machloket between Shaul and David. When a person gives kiddushin, when a person wants to marry a girl, and he says, I'm giving you an apple, and I'll give you $1 million tomorrow. What is the girl thinking about? The apple she's getting now or the $1 million she'll get tomorrow? Because if she's thinking about the $1 million, then she's not married. And if she's thinking about the apple, then she is married. Because you can marry a girl with something that's the value of a nickel or a dime or something like that. But you can't marry a girl with a loan. You have to give her something concrete. And David's marriage to Michal was just that. And that was the machloket David and Shaul. Was she legally married to David or not? Shaul held not. David held yes. Well, they could be used as dog food. They do have the value of about a dime or a dollar or whatever. Okay, so this is where we'll have to pick up next time.